Well, biogas may not be a familiar term, but natural gas probably is. And while as a country and a planet where we still use predominantly more traditional forms of fuel like natural gas, there's a lot of exciting research going on to move us forward towards cleaner and more renewable sources. And some new biofuels are complete departures from usual sources, and some, like biogas, are a more renewable product closely linked to one of the old standbys. We're happy to have John Greenler, who is the director of the Education and Outreach Program for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, back again. Great to have you here, John.
Thanks. Great to be here, Judith.
And Gary Radloff is the Director of Midwest Policy Analysis for the Wisconsin Bioenergy Initiative, and he joins us today, too. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, I love the shows that we do with the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center because it's, you know, a lot of them are topics that might be new to us or, you know, something that we just heard, kind of the phrases. But when we dig into it, there's so many similarities, I think, in the issues that we talk about. You know, we're trying to lessen the impact of what our fuel consumption, kind of in all areas of life, are. We're trying to find alternatives that, you know, being realistic, you know, Americans and probably most other people in the world are not suddenly going to cut their energy consumption down to a fraction of what we're using now. In fact, it might grow with larger populations, but really trying to address those needs and that demand, but in ways that just are lighter on the earth. And using, I think, using things that are already exist. So it's always really exciting, and it always gets me thinking in different ways and feeling hopeful for the future. And today is no exception because biogas sounds really promising. And so why don't we first talk about what biogas is? Gary, why don't you field that one?
Well, that one, typically it comes from production of using waste feedstocks on a farm. It would be animal manure, but it can come from food waste at a landfill, or wastewater treatment plants can also produce it with the waste they process. And they run it through something called an anaerobic digester, which produces the biogas. And the biogas then can be converted to energy in three or four different ways. The most typical one is to connect it with a genset and make electricity and put it on the electrical grid. But I think the emerging opportunities are to make it into a gas that could be cleaned up to pipeline quality, or even a compressed natural gas, which could be a vehicle fuel for fleet vehicles. And if we had compressed natural gas pumps and stations, you could literally run it on the highway. In European countries, it's actually very common to do that.
Wow.
So we're starting to see that opportunity emerge. And then also you can use the heat from this process as well. So there's many energy pathways with biogas through an anaerobic digester.
So let's back up a little. I'm glad you mentioned anaerobic digester again. So anaerobic, if I'm correct, means not using oxygen.
Correct.
It's an oxygenless atmosphere.
Exactly.
Why is anaerobic digesting important to turn something like these materials into biogas?
Well, first off, you're talking about methane, which is a very potent greenhouse gas. So you want to be able to capture it, which is what an anaerobic digester does. It's captured within that system and then converted. So that's kind of the critical part of it in their anaerobic digester. And for agriculture uses, one of the initial attractions to anaerobic digesters is it gets rid of odors for manure. So that's why large farms have adopted them first as kind of the early adopters. It also allows you to handle a waste product for nutrient management as well. So there's just some logical reasons to put it through that process of anaerobic digestion.
And John, did you want to add something?
No, I was just going to say that, you know, once again, you know, in Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, we really look at a diversity of ways that we can use natural processes to our advantage in terms of innovative energy systems. So really what we're talking about here is taking advantage of microbes, bacteria in this case, that are actually, you know, facilitating this anaerobic process.
Anyway,
so,
right?
You know, we're looking to Mother Nature for some innovative solutions.
Well, and the materials that you're talking about using, so things like manure, things like, you know, wastewater treatment centers, things like that, I think one of our, you know, our listeners are always really astute when we're talking about these different, you know, technologies and different materials that might be used to turn into energy. And often, John, you can attest to the fact that often people call and say, well, yeah, that sounds great, but what about all the energy you're expending in growing, say, the switchgrass or the hemp? Or, you know, what about inputs and what about the electricity that you're using to produce them? And I think they're very valid. You know, they're really trying to look holistically at what are the real costs of this. But what you're talking about is using microbes to do what they do anyway,
right,
and using materials that are going to get produced whether, you know, whether we're using them for this or not. I mean, cows are going to produce manure, and we have a lot of cows in this country. And so I think that's one of the really exciting parts, is that both the process and the initial input are just there anyway.
Right. Yeah, and that analysis that you're talking about, you know, we label that as being an LCA, a life cycle assessment, is really critical and can really help us, you know, make decisions like what Gary was talking about. So we have this resource, you know, this anaerobic process of producing methane. You know, what's the best way to use it? And I think, you know, looking at, you know, where is the demand greatest and how can we be most efficient in a particular context, kind of doing that full accounting, not just energy in, energy out, but also things like greenhouse gas emissions that you mentioned as well, is really critical for making sure that we're looking comprehensively at all the implications of our choices.
I would add, too, as a society, we spend millions and millions of dollars handling waste already. Obviously, a very clear one is the amount of money we spend on landfills. It takes you 10 years to site a new landfill, so we have to manage that very carefully. We spend millions of dollars on wastewater treatment plants, and even farmers spend millions of dollars sort of handling their manure. So my view is we're already handling all this material, spending a lot of money on it. Why not try to do something positive with it and maybe divert some of that money to something like an anaerobic digester where you can have much more positive outcomes from something you're already handling and spending money on.
Right, and you're going to have to dispose of it in some way, in a managed way anyway, like you said. Well, listeners, what questions do you have about biogas? Have you heard of it before? Do you think it sounds promising? We'd love to have you join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And, of course, there's our Facebook page, The Larry Mealer Show. You can post a question or comment there. And Mealer is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Sometimes Larry assumes people know how to spell his name. I always try to make a point of doing it. So, Gary, you mentioned that there are a few different ways that biogas could either supplement energy or replace different types. One of the really exciting ways, I think, is natural gas. And natural gas has kind of, I think they've had a very good public campaign to try to separate themselves from what are considered dirty forms of energy. But natural gas is not renewable in and of itself, whereas biogas is. In what ways can biogas potentially decrease our use of natural gas, or could it actually replace our use of natural gas?
Well, there's kind of a robust discussion going on right now about that. I think, you know, in the energy world and throughout society, we're kind of wrestling right now is what does this mean to have all this natural gas? And I think the folks in the biogas area feel that it's a positive in that it'll probably result in some infrastructure investments in piping and other equipment, which then biogas could connect to. So I think, you know, for a state like Wisconsin, it makes sense to really continue to aggressively pursue biogas opportunities because we have so much of the feedstock, manure, but also food processing. We have over 1,000 food processors in our state. Many of them are small, but even small ones could maybe aggregate waste or partner with another anaerobic digester. So I think, you know, for our state, it really makes sense to pursue biogas. And I think with this development of natural gas, it's just going to, like I say, kind of clear the pathway because of that infrastructure investment. So, you know, without sort of endorsing the natural gas development, I think for biogas, it's a positive.
Well, and it's in my non-scientific reading of things, it seems like that's kind of the most natural use of biogas, that the way it's produced and the end product, it kind of automatically becomes a substitute for natural gas, whereas you're saying, like, to turn it into energy, there's a whole other kind of process that has to go on.
Yeah, and I think also the prospects of the compressed natural gas as a vehicle fuel are very exciting. The California Air Resources Board has one of the most aggressive policies in terms of monitoring greenhouse gases from vehicle emissions and use. And they rate compressed natural gas as probably the cleanest.
Wow.
And so I think if we could really continue to pursue that opportunity to run, I don't think we're going to convert all of our vehicles to compressed mm-hmm. natural gas. I'm not saying that. But why not look at certain mm-hmm. sectors that maybe have to haul things a lot or, mm-hmm. you know, delivering
sure.
the mail or whatever, you know, where you have fleets and things mm-hmm. like that. I think we could run all of our fleets on compressed natural gas. And we have a lot of fleets in this
yeah.
country.
It is, you know, within the context of how we use fossil fuels today broadly, both nationally and globally, the transportation sector is really a crux point, because if you look at the data, essentially 100% of our transportation energy at this point comes from petroleum, comes from mm-hmm. fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. We really have very few alternatives at this point. If you look at electricity, clearly we can talk about things like wind and solar, hydro, et cetera. But transportation, we're really at this point hardwired into using those fossil fuels. So any opportunity that we can open up to kind of get away from using that, you know, that petroleum base, those fossil fuels, is so important in terms of addressing this myriad of issues, from greenhouse gas emissions to national energy security. It's kind of a long list, and so that transportation piece really is a crux point. And finding those alternatives is just a particularly unique opportunity.
Well, and I completely agree with you, John. And I think that in the public mindset, we have become much more aware of the need to replace or decrease our dependence and use on petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that there has been quite the same urgency felt about replacing natural gas.
Right.
So I think you're right in going for that. That solution might give us more to talk about, and then moving into
yeah.
others. We are talking with Gary Radloff. He is the Director of Midwest Policy Analysis for the Wisconsin Bioenergy Initiative, and John Greenler, Director of Education and Outreach Programs for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. More coming here on the Ideas Network. As traditional sources of energy are depleted, there's a global need for affordable, sustainable energy. And here in Wisconsin, we have world-class research going on to fill those needs. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. So glad to have you with us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Every couple of months, we're happy to have folks connected to the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center come by to tell us about new developments in the search for cleaner, renewable energy. Our guests today have great information to share about current work to use biogas to make Wisconsin an energy leader. John Greenler and Gary Radloff are with us until 12:30, and they're happy to answer your questions. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234, and you can email us at talk@wpr.org or leave a question or comment on our Facebook page. If you like the page while you're there, you'll get regular updates on upcoming show topics. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after the news. Well, every couple of months, we're happy to have folks from the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center come by to talk about exciting new developments in alternative and cleaner fuels. John Greenler is the director of the Education and Outreach Program for Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. Great to have you back, John.
Thank you very much.
And today, Gary Radloff is joining John, and he is the director of Midwest Policy Analysis for the Wisconsin Bioenergy Initiative. Thanks again for coming, Gary.
My pleasure.
Well, we actually have some folks that have been waiting to join the conversation, so let's go to the phones. Jeffrey in Appleton is up first. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
So I drive by landfills both in Outagamie County and Winnebago County, and they have flares which are burning off the methane, which I understand decreases the greenhouse gas. But is there a better way to utilize this, and why is it not being utilized?
Great. Thanks for that question, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I think that's definitely an emerging opportunity. Around the country, there are wastewater treatment plants that use anaerobic digesters. Right now, they primarily use them as just part of their process of managing the waste. But more and more of them are looking to convert it to the energy. And I think that's a great opportunity. I recently read a study that said for large wastewater treatment plants, that not only could they run their entire facility on the energy from the wastewater treatment plant, they actually had 9 times more energy than they needed.
Wow.
So that energy then could go to the community use. So, yeah, I think wastewater treatment plants, landfills, food processing plants. Obviously, we talked about agriculture facilities. Lots of opportunities with anaerobic digesters to make biogas energy.
So basically, you're saying, and we were talking about this on the break, these are all materials that we have to manage somehow anyway. So just kind of using them in a different way instead of just managing them, actively using them could actually take care of the energy needed to do it and much more.
Yeah, I've kind of joked that we need to take the word waste out of the vocabulary, that there's a positive use for these materials and they shouldn't be considered waste. And so I think that's kind of the trend and where we're going. You know, I think if you look at Europe, for example, they've kind of had that attitude for a long time. There are a number of countries over there that do not landfill. Germany's really been one of the leaders. We visited Freiburg, Germany, and their policy for Freiburg is no landfilling, and they pretty much can achieve it. And anaerobic digesters is one part of that strategy.
Wow.
It's not the only piece.
So they don't go into it with an assumption that some stuff is just not going to be used and it just needs to be kind of put out of the way.
Yeah, they basically want to figure out a way to use all the so-called waste and find a positive use for it. Now, some of it at the end is combusted, which is maybe not the best end use. But at that point, they've shrunk down the amount they have to such a small amount that it's not as a negative as it sounds. But anaerobic digesters are a big part of handling that waste. Food waste is a really good feedstock for generating methane gas.
Wow. And John, I mean, you do a lot of outreach and education on a variety of different technologies and new types of energy. What do you think it will take? This is a big question. What do you think it'll take to change the American mindset so that we are thinking in ways of, you know, waste doesn't have to be waste and we shouldn't just be throwing things on a pile somewhere and letting it rot down? What's it going to take?
Well, I think, well, to start off with, actually, just in terms of like wording and semantics, which I think can be important, we frequently kind of tend towards the word residue as compared to waste. So we may have a primary objective, you know, in a particular process, whether it be growing corn or in forestry. But then we have all these other materials,
right,
you know, which we like to think of as being residues. So they're not the primary product necessarily, but, you know, pretty quickly when you look at any of these materials, there's a lot of value that is tapped into them. And a lot of it has to do with public perception is pretty key, but then also really kind of incentivizing the development of the infrastructure to be able to take advantage of those resources, which, you know, frequently, you know, maybe being used already, but, you know, not in the, in the best possible fashion. And so, you know, how can we work, you know, within our economic system, within our governmental structures to provide the stability frequently to for private, you know, enterprises, big and small, to be able to invest in infrastructure, et cetera, to really be able to take advantage of these materials. And so some of it is public perception and the understanding that these, you know, these materials, these waste turned into residue materials are important. But then the next step really is to say, how can we really collaborate? How can we come together, you know, on a number of different scales? It can be locally, it can be nationally, to really provide not necessarily subsidies, but just, you know, a loaning structure, et cetera, or just a market structure that will allow for the development of the businesses to be able to really do what needs to be done best with those materials.
Well, and I think that Dwight in Duluth actually has a question that relates to that. So let's go there. Hi, Dwight.
Hello. Yes, I'm wondering what, you know, for, say we put this on every turkey farm, chicken farm, hog farm, cattle farm, and then every wastewater plant in the cities, what will the initial startup cost for these type of plants? And what would be the payback as far as how long would it take, say, they're just making energy? I mean, I could see every little farm having their own power plant and distributing it more on a local basis versus how we are right now.
Right. And I think that's an interesting question because, you know, like John was saying, you know, you can produce something, but if there's not an infrastructure to distribute it. I mean, for instance, we have solar panels on our house, and that's great. And part of the reason we were able to do it is there were some grants available to help defray the cost, and we could just hook into the local utility grid and sell what we're generating to them. We don't even have to store it to use ourselves, you know. So I think that infrastructure is really important. So as Dwight was saying, you know, how long does it take to basically make sense and pay itself back?
Well, it's right now it's pretty tough because the systems are pretty expensive. So we've seen most of the early adopters in the United States be the large type of agriculture operations. You know, the costs can be up to like $1,000 per head of dairy cattle. So, you know, it has required various federal tax breaks and state subsidies or federal subsidies to really make these projects work. I think those costs could come down, though, if we looked at something more like the German model, where they use something called a feed-in tariff for small-scale projects. They pay them a buyback rate for the energy that's generated from the farm that helps them to pay back the project much quicker. And it isn't a subsidy system. It's actually a system where, because it's sort of leveraging ratepayer and utility money, they go to the bank still and get a loan for the project, but the banks are much more willing to do the loans because they have a contract for 15 years at this rate.
Mm-hmm.
And the bank says, hey, we can finance that. So I think we need to find ways that we can structure this and spread out the costs through a larger group, mm-hmm. like all of the state ratepayers. It wouldn't be such a big impact.
There's also frequently an issue of scale. It can be very difficult for a small producer to really get into this on their particular farm. But, you know, if we can do the research to develop the technologies that a diversity of different types of materials could be used in these digesters. And so, you know, farmers could be bringing their residue materials, their waste materials from a diversity of different types of productions, whether it's, you know, turkey or cow mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, and there's, you know, a kind of a cooperative type structure. Then, you know, the system does begin to look more favorable as well. So,
great. Well, thanks for that call. Let's go next to Bernie in Valders. Hi, Bernie.
Hi. I've got a couple problems with the use of methane digesters, particularly with respect to farms. And there's two points to be made here. Number one, the methane digesters break down only the organic portion of that. That is to say, cellulose, urea, anything, ammonia that is in the manure, and the phosphorus and potassium are still left. They really do not greatly reduce the amount of water that's in the manure. So you still have a hauling issue. And a disposal issue with what's left with that. The second and I think most important issue is that by consuming all the organic matter in the manure, you're really breaking the manure crop cycle, which is what was successful Wisconsin agriculture has been based on for a really long time. And here's why that's significant. Number one, by getting rid of all the organic matter, you're not putting it back in the ground, and that organic matter is really critical to being able to grow crops, in particular here in eastern Wisconsin in our heavy clay soils. The second part of that is that if you no longer have nitrogen in the manure, that fertilizer value is lost, and then it has to be replaced by something. In corn, it ends up getting replaced by things like anhydrous ammonia and urea, which are made from natural gas. So I really question whether or not it pays to set up $1 million methane digester on some of these farms and then have to buy nitrogen from other sources.
Okay, Bernie, I'm going to ask Gary and John to respond to those points that you made. Gary?
Well, currently, the farmers that utilize the product that's coming out of the anaerobic digester, they can still spread it on their land, and they believe that it's actually still a very good fertilizer. So, you know, there's some debate on that. There definitely is research going on, but I think preliminary indications are that you haven't lost the values that the caller was concerned about.
And also, I mean, it seems like, and maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like part of Bernie's assumption was that huge amounts of manure would be diverted from one use to the other. But I think what we've been talking about is that, you know, it's always a patchwork of solutions. And so some manure which may or may not be used to spread on fields now, could be used to produce the biogas?
Yeah, I think, you know, Bernie asked, a series of very informed questions, which I think, very astute and are exactly the kinds of things that are currently being researched. And there are some real innovative opportunities that are kind of on the horizon in terms of the phosphorus and potassium issue. Once again, in some ways, it's kind of like a derivative that's actually a residue material from a residue material being processed.
Yeah.
And I can't give you the details, but I do know that there are some really interesting kind of startups that are being looked at how to use that and actually how it can have a lot of value. I really appreciate his concern in regards to loss of organic matter in soils, because he's right on track there. This is something which is really important and that we really need to look at in terms of any change into our cropping systems, because organic matter is really fundamental to kind of maintaining that soil resource, which builds up so slowly. And there are ways to compensate for that. So, for example, somewhat related, another residue that's of interest in terms of producing biofuels from cellulosic materials is corn stover. And we need to be very careful how much corn stover we take off of a cornfield, because a lot of that organic matter, once again, does need to go back into mm-hmm. the soil to maintain that the tilth and nutrient level of the soil. And so one needs to be considered of how much is taken, and then if there is the opportunity to take more, are there alternatives? So, for example, one thing that we're currently considering is rotations or integration of cover crops, so growing things like rye and peas to supplement mm-hmm. for the removal of something like corn stover might actually, be a way to work within that system to be able to address these mm-hmm. kinds of issues.
And also, especially peas will fix nitrogen in
yes.
the soil too.
Yeah,
so.
And rye just grows like gangbusters, provides a huge amount of organic matter, both in terms of the above and below ground mm-hmm. Portion of the plant.
So it sounds like, Bernie definitely had some very valid concerns, but it's an issue of proportion, and it's an issue about thinking creatively about different
right.
ways to replace
yep.
those.
You need to look at the whole system. You need to understand what are all the ramifications of any change, that we make in the agricultural
right.
landscape, and making sure that, that we're not altering something which is going to have negative mm-hmm. repercussions, or if there is something, is there a way to address that hopefully will, create a net benefit.
I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller, and we're talking about the development of biogas as a renewable resource. John Greenler from the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and Gary Radloff of the Wisconsin Bioenergy Initiative joining us today. And you can join in by leaving a question or comment on our Facebook page or sending an email to talk@WPR.org. Our phones are full right now, but we'll be happy to try to get your comments through. And let's go to Tona in Washburn next. Hi, Tona.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for taking me. I'm really excited about this program because it's something that I've been interested in a long time. I called in because I've been following San Antonio, Texas for about 7 to 10 years now, and they have slowly converted their entire city over to this. And what they do, which is very interesting because San Antonio, Texas is a pretty large city. I think it's about 250,000. And they took all of their wastewater from their city, which is their sewage, and they hooked it up to anaerobic digesters in their wastewater facility, which a lot of them, like the guest you have on, said, certain places have done. And what they have done is they've added on throughout the years to make it, and now they're pretty much at their last, this is it, they're at their height. They have it like to perfection, I guess you could say. To answer the one fellow's question about the burn-offs of the methane, well, they figured out how to recapture that because they were producing so much natural gas. Their whole city is run, they run their city off of electricity and, of course, natural gas. They use their natural gas to fire their power plant that uses the that produces the electricity, and they also have natural gas for their clients that utilize natural gas for heating and cooling, etc. And they've now are recapturing the natural gas that they were burning off, and they're selling it to an outside natural gas company
I just
that then fills their tanks and then goes around and sells it to their outside area that isn't within their area.
So, Tona, when you're saying natural gas, do you mean biogas?
Well, it's made from, you know, they make the methane into natural gas.
I'm going to ask Gary to comment on that.
Well, you know, you've seen some very interesting solutions really around the globe, and so I'm not that acquainted specifically with what San Antonio is doing, but again, when we studied some of the German systems, one of the things that was interesting was to see if they were near a local community, they would take the heat and send that into, in one case, it was the local grocery store was using the heat. The electricity was converted onto the grid. And then one of the things that was, you know, we talked about some of the co-products or what comes off at the end of the digestion process. They actually were using it in partnership with a cement company and mixing it into somehow the mixture of cement because, you know, the company actually wanted it. So, you know, it truly was a closed loop system. So, I think, again, there's a lot of creative options here, depending on where you locate these facilities, what's your nearby, who has an energy need.
Mm-hmm.
But the biogas is different than natural gas, and we were talking about kind of how that those two systems will interface eventually. But I actually think a biogas, if we build up an infrastructure for moving natural gas around with these new discoveries, that biogas can definitely be a part of that.
Great. Thanks for that call, Tona. And let's go to G in Madison. Hi, G.
Hi. Yeah, I'm going to come at this point from a socio-political perspective. Things like recycling, reusing, and living lightly on the land has never been a forte of the Eurocentric cultures. It has been much more prevalent and much more used outside the Western Europe and America after the colonization by the Europeans. When I was growing up, my grandparents used to live in the village, and cow dung was popularly used for all sorts of purposes, for cleaning floors, for plastering walls, and starting in the 70s, very cheap, we used to call them gober gas plants. Gober means basically manure, cow manure, were used to supply cooking gas for the houses. This has been done in India since the 70s, at least. And when I hear your guests not pay any tribute to that, it reminds me of the other things which European culture has done, like crediting Columbus with discovering a world where people already lived, crediting Copernicus with finding the solar system, and people in the East knew that a long time ago.
Okay.
And so on and so forth. So I find it, from a sociopolitical, anthropological point of view, I find it very disturbing that no credit and nothing is bothered to be learned from these cultures. And they, of course, learn from these cultures because that's where they got the ideas from.
Okay, G, we only have a couple minutes left, and I want to give the guests an opportunity to respond to that. John?
Yeah, I really appreciate G's call, actually, because he's exactly right. I mean, there's really a wide diversity of needs when we look globally and corresponding a diversity of opportunities. And you're right, we've largely been kind of, you know, developed world centric in our discussions today. But I think, you know, there is a significant appreciation of kind of the needs and the appropriate technologies, when we do look globally and we look internationally. And you're exactly right. There's a lot of great projects that have been going on for a long time in terms of using anaerobic digestion in developing countries and more rural areas. And we actually, there's some really exciting projects here on the UW-Madison campus that have been funded to kind of try and solve a whole suite of problems, of challenges, by using exactly these kinds of renewable resources. And you're right, there's some really great news in terms of very innovative, very simple, small digesters to produce methane that really supports the economies in developing countries looking globally. So
Yeah, we actually have a couple of students who worked on our project where that went to Germany. They're now actually starting a business in Africa for small-scale digesters just for the purpose that the caller described in terms of a cooking gas. So, yeah, it can really be done at many scales and, mm-hmm. and in many different kind of situations, and we need to be open-minded about all those options.
And it's a diversity of different types of materials. It can be anaerobic digestion. I know of projects using cellulosic biomass to produce briquettes, which will clean very burnly, also address kind of health air quality issues mm-hmm. As well. So we really need to kind of look at these integrative approaches to look at energy, to look at health, to look at, you know, development, economic development as well.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion, and I'm really glad that we could talk with you both. John Greenler is the director of the Education and Outreach Program for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. He comes by every couple months to share interesting news with us. John, thanks so much.
A pleasure.
And Gary Ratliff came along with him today. He's director of Midwest Policy Analysis for the Wisconsin Bioenergy Initiative. Gary, thanks so much.
It's been fun talking with everybody.
And just to let you know, tomorrow we will be talking about food. At 11, we'll talk with Bobby Malone and Therese Allen about their book, The Flavor of Wisconsin for Kids. They have great ideas for getting children involved with cooking and interested in food traditions at the same time. Then at 11:45, we chat with Tricia Cornell about her book, Eat More Vegetables, Making the Most of Your Seasonal Produce. I hope you'll join us for that and other great programs on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening.